Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and today I'm going to introduce you all to Bonnie Dilber. Bonnie is the recruiting manager at Zapier. She leads the business recruiting team, which focuses on placing and hiring for roles in the finance, sales, marketing, people, operations, support, legal, and leadership teams. Founded in 2011, Zapier's mission is to make automation work for everyone. It's a leader in no-code automation, and they make it easier to automate workflows and move data across more than 6,000 apps. Zapier powers customers from startups to Fortune 100 companies that you know and love. Before moving into tech, she actually spent years working in education and nonprofits as a teacher, a program manager, and a leading recruitment leader. So thanks for coming on the show, Bonnie.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to kick off the new year with a conversation on recruiting.
I mean, hopefully I did your background justice, but just in case, can you walk us through your career?
Yeah, I think you hit all the highlights. But I feel like I've had a little bit of a non-traditional path. I started off my career as a teacher. I did a program called Teach for America. And that really just came from not being sure what I was going to do with my sociology and women's studies background. That's what I studied in college, not the most practical. But I thought it was going to be kind of a two-year thing before law school. I ended up actually falling in love with teaching and with education. And so decided to kind of build a career there and taught for several years, kindergarten, third grade, eighth grade, like then moved into teacher development and I managed a team and happened to be a part of like a growing team. And my favorite part of my job was hiring. That was where I thrived. I love talking to people about why they should join the team. And at one point I was living and working in Oklahoma, which was a tough sell. And we were trying to recruit from all like from San Francisco and Chicago and all these big cities. I love like convincing people of like the potential for impact in our community and that sort of thing. So anyway, when I was kind of felt like I had reached the end of the road with kind of instructional leadership, I decided I wanted to like go into recruiting and because that was just like where I found the most joy. So moved into recruiting and led a talent acquisition team for a rapidly growing charter school network in Texas and eventually like into Louisiana and some other states. And then did university recruitment with Teach for America, where I started my own career. And then moved to Zapier back in 2021.
So how did you make that pivot? Just being a teacher for so long and then all of a sudden say, okay, I'm going to be in tech.
Yeah. Something I've shared with people is the first time I applied to work at Google, which was the first tech company I applied to, it was 2014. I did not get an interview. I probably just got a rejection the same day. But that was my first attempt. And I was coming from like a highly instructional background where all I had really done is worked in teacher development. But that was one of the things I even thought about as I moved into recruiting, was that recruiting was a far more transferable skill that I could like move into other industries. And that was, so there was even a level of intentionality there, although it also aligned with like what I just loved. But I think a lot of it was like continuing to build the skill set and continuing to try and like network. And I applied many, many times before I got an interview. My first interview with a tech company, which was also Google, was 2018. So, you know, it was like several years of working in education and applying and like reapplying before I finally got an offer. And I think that it was a mix of continuing to build my skill set and those like transferable skills. Some of it was luck. It was timing. I applied at a time when tech was really, there was a big hiring boom and they were short on recruiters. So it was a lot easier to get into a recruiting position. And the other thing, and I've shared this with folks, is like, be flexible. I was in management roles. I had actually never been an individual contributor recruiter before Zapier. But I was struggling to get offers. I was getting interviews, but I was not getting offers as a recruiting manager. And multiple times I lost out to an internal candidate. And so I said, hey, I'm going to like go in and be the internal candidate. I'm going to go for a senior recruiter role. And then I got a ton of interviews, like within 3 months, I had multiple offers. And then I came to Zapier, and then I was able to get promoted back into a management role pretty quickly. And so I think that also helped, just sort of like humbling myself and being willing to kind of come into a position that might have been like perceived as a step back, but allowed me to learn and build the kind of knowledge gaps that I had so that I could continue to grow.
What do you think are the connection? Because I was talking to Rick before the show started about teaching, because as it happens, my parents are teachers, my mom, my dad, my brother's a school psychologist, my uncles, my aunts. Seriously, I'm the only one in my family who's not a teacher. And even then, they pressured me a little bit to go into it, but I always wanted to do my own thing. I know you did the recruiting there, but do you think is there something with teaching that could cross over to recruiting, the empathy, the trying to help people? Do you think that's where it comes from?
Yeah, I love that. So I think teachers are some of the most underrated people. And I bet you know this and probably agree with it, because the skill set that you have to have as a teacher, like so many of those skills could go to almost anything. I mean, trying to convince 13-year-olds that they want to, you know, spend their days like reading really dense text and, you know, things like that. And like finding ways to make that like fun and engaging for kids when they've got so many other things on their minds. Like teachers have so many like people skills, empathy, the ability to influence people, the ability to get a lot of stuff done with very few resources, and get like creative about how they use resources. My first year as a teacher, I raised thousands of dollars for like building a community garden. My second year, I raised like $40,000 to take my kids from Texas to Florida for Disney World. Like, I mean, those are really meaningful skills that could you know, benefit me in like lots of other places, but I don't think that people necessarily give teachers credit for all of that. I think customer success is like a great space for teachers. Like they can teach people to do just about anything and break it down to meet anyone kind of where they are. Because they're literally trained to like differentiate their approach for different audiences and things like that. But yeah, so I think recruiting is a really great space for teachers. And back when I was leading a recruiting team in education, 100% of the people I hired came from like teaching background. Well, all except one, actually. I hired
one. Did you do that purposely or just played out that way?
Well, part of it was like, I actually felt like that was really important. Like we generally did. And I think most education organizations are the same way, because you want someone that can speak about the work that you're asking people to do and who like understand. Like teachers, I mean, people are trusting their children, like their children's future with teachers. And so you want people that understand the importance of that work, like representing your school system, in my opinion. And so, yeah, but what I saw was they were all great. And a lot of them are now at big tech companies. I mean, like half the team I manage at Teacher America works at like Google or Meta at some point in the last 2 years. And so are Amazon, tons of them at Amazon. And so, I think a lot of other tech companies have like realized that there's a skill set there too, that they should actually be actively recruiting.
You know, that's wild. I don't think I've ever heard that kind of career progression before, but the way you're walking through, Rick, it makes sense, doesn't it? Because, you know, you're a teacher, so you have 30 kids in your class. They don't want to pay attention. So you got to find ways to engage them. And then you also, everyone's a little different, just like recruiting, like not everyone's going to act the same way. So you got to figure out, how do I get to Johnny? How do I get to Susan? Yeah. How do I really? So it takes a lot for a good teacher. Some teachers don't care, but like you seem like you were a good teacher. So you could really learn how to individualize it and learn from it. Same way with a candidate. Is that kind of?
I mean, exactly. Yeah. Like, and you kind of figure out like what's going to motivate this person. I think people also kind of undersell the different skills recruiters have, but as recruiters, you're kind of thinking about like, what do I know about this hiring manager? What do I know about what this team needs, about this individual that I've talked to, their motivations? How do I make all of that match up and help everyone like understand what they need to, so that this is the right fit and that it's a fit that's going to, you know, go long-term. Recruiters are educating candidates about your company culture. They're, you know, they are kind of educators, representatives, salespeople of your company's, you know, culture and mission and goals. And so I think a lot of the skills like you use as a teacher, like I'm someone who has huge stage fright, but I've gotten comfortable over time with like getting in front of audiences and just talking. And part of that came from the classroom. I mean, yeah. My first year in the classroom, I was like stumbling over everything. But over time, like you just build that comfort.
I love that reminder because I think there's so many people listening to the show where they're thinking about how to break into tech, or maybe it's actually the other way around where, you know, they've been a software engineer. They've kind of hit that like software professional, software engineer kind of plateau. And they're trying to think, do I want to go on the management track? How do I get that next level promotion?
Yeah.
And they're starting to say like, oh, maybe I actually should go and work at a startup or work in an entirely different industry. I mean, do you have any advice for those folks that may just be a bit more senior that are kind of like stuck in that hump in their career and trying to figure out what to do next?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things is figure out like what are the points of your day that bring you the most joy and excitement. And that's kind of where I was. I mean, I was like 10 years into my career when I moved from the instructional side into recruiting, still within like educational organizations, but, you know, into like the talent acquisition side. And for me, that came from like, what's the stuff I get most excited about? And what's the stuff I find draining? Now let me try to find a job that lets me spend more time doing the things I like and less time doing the things I dread. And so I think doing some of that, like, personal reflection can help. I think talking to different people, you know, I don't know if I know that 20 years ago, we were supposed to kind of like stay at a company and grow with that company and retire from that company. And there were all sorts of incentives and pensions and things like that to incentivize that. That's not the world we live in today. And I think the upside of that is that people can find that, you know, fit. Like if you find yourself, I'm someone who does like to have my hands on lots of things. I don't want every day to look the same. So a startup or a smaller company is a better environment for someone like me because you generally get to have your hands in more things and stretch beyond your role. Some people might say, I'm a consistency person. I want to know what every day is going to look like. I thrive when I can plan everything out months in advance. They might, you know, there's like a different environment that's good for that. And I think like learning those things about yourself and figuring out where, what you do well, what you enjoy, and sort of like what opportunities are at the intersection of those things can be really powerful for making work a more just enjoyable and fulfilling space for you.
I mean, can I dig in there? Like you mentioned this little anecdote about, oh, you know, previously it was like the best advice was to stay at a company for like 20 years. And there's like all these like little like truisms or like little like life hacks that are kind of like passed down. And, you know, looking now at we're here in 2024, some of these might not necessarily apply. So can you kind of like help us wade through like what are the great like kind of career generalizations or career tips that we should follow and maybe some that we should just like leave behind in the past?
Good question. And I bet Jack, like you probably have insights on this given like your experience in this space and probably like more longevity than I have in like the talent work. But for me, I think this like employers, like there are employers who were raised or, you know, hiring managers who were raised in a different world and different hiring landscape who still have that mindset towards today's workforce. So I think certain things, like I even remember when I was first became a hiring manager being told things like if someone has, you know, a gap on their resume, that's a flag. Today, that's not a flag anymore because we live in a culture where people are encouraged to take time away from work to go travel, or where so many people have been affected by layoffs that it's, you know, and we all understand that it takes a really long time to get a job. Average job search right now is 5-6 months. And that's kind of if you're lucky. For some people, it's taking a lot longer. So if a hiring manager is still holding resume gaps against someone in 2024, to me, that's just, you know, it's biased and silly. And like, they need to understand the landscape that they're hiring in today. You know, things like we used to, I think, look at someone staying and growing with a company as, you know, that sign of loyalty. But today, I think, again, we understand that relationship has changed where, one, there's fewer incentives. Like, I don't think people were staying at a company out of loyalty to the company and its mission back in 1970, I think they were staying because they knew if they stayed, they were going to get that pension and they could retire. We don't live in that world. Companies are not offering pensions. They're not like offering incentives for people to stay long term. And so I don't think it means that the workforce is less loyal. If you want to hire the kind of person that's going to stay long term, I'm sure if you pay them and treat them well, they will. And so if that's important to you, it's on you as an employer. It's not like a flaw of the individual. So I think a lot of those like mindsets that are kind of understandings that we were taught about hiring were based on a very different reality than the one that we live in today.
Makes a lot of sense. I really like that you dig into that, because I mean, you share some hot takes and columns for like Business Insider, HuffPost. I mean, I'm going to read some of the headlines that, because they're just so good. Like the last one that I read was, here are three things you should lie about during your interview to land the job. I've also bookmarked the best time to apply for jobs is actually the end of the year. Like this kind of like counterintuitive, kind of like spicy, kind of funny takes.
Yeah.
Like, can you break down how you've come to those like conclusions, those realizations?
Yeah, a little bit of clickbait because that's fun. Yeah, but I think I'll just go backwards because we're at that point, like the end of the year / beginning of the year. But something I've shared is I think like if you put yourself in the mindset of like the hiring manager, I think a lot of these things start to make sense. I think with hiring in December is hard. I mean, I'm sure y'all manage people, so we all know this. Hiring when you're working up against like holiday deadlines and travel and all of that, it drags out processes. And when a hiring process loses momentum, you have the risk of losing the candidate. One of the reasons like I fell in love with Zapier in my hiring process was it moved so quickly. They would tell me within like 24 hours how I had done in the process and what was next. Like it just moved so quickly and I felt like valued. I felt like excited by the company. And I, you know, it just like puts you in a place where you're going to say yes. Having a 2-week break in your hiring process does not do that. So in my opinion, like if a company takes the time to post a role on December 15th, that's because they're desperate to fill that role. Like they want to get someone quickly. They're willing to interview. Like there is no motivation in 2023, 2024 to post a job and then just like accrue applicants that you can't do anything with for 2 weeks because you're going out on vacation. So that's why I was, and a lot of candidates don't want to deal with it when they have like holiday plans and holiday travel and PTO and all of that. So, I mean, my suggestion to candidates is if you see a role posted like in December, they're probably like posted for the first time. They're probably pretty serious about hiring for it because otherwise, why would they want to deal with all of that? And then the other thing that I think this like carries into the new year and has, you know, bared out, I actually just pulled some data on this morning that I can share, but, is that like companies will post a bunch of jobs right in the new year. And so if you're ready for your job search, you've got your resume ready, like you will see lots of jobs posted in early January because a lot of those companies didn't want to deal with all the mess of December. So they just held on to those roles and said, we'll just post it in the new year. Alongside also like budgets refreshing in the new year and all of that. So like we've seen a net gain of over 200,000 roles in just the first week of January. Like I looked at the beginning of January and we were just under 5.2 million. This is on LinkedIn for the US. Today we're at 5.4 million. And so, you know, and that's net. Like some roles have already been posted and taken down, or roles that were in December have come down. So the gross number of roles posted has been even more than that. But net new. And so yeah.
That's encouraging.
More
that's
roles have been posted. Like if you look, a couple 100,000 roles will have been posted in the last day alone. But some other sets of roles came down. So
what are some like employer recruiting red flags that job candidates, recruiters, like often they like overlook or they miss or they see often in their kind of like day to day?
Flags for candidates when evaluating a company or company?
Yeah, or like things that like just people miss when they're kind of like so focused on like, oh, cool, I see this role, it's perfect. But like, actually, if you read through the job description, you know, like maybe this like line that says like, oh, we're looking for really super motivated people. maybe that's code word for like, hey, you have no resources, right? Or it's like, you're going to work 6 days a week.
You're working a lot of hours.
Yeah. I mean, some of the ones that I think people will cite, even though I take these with a grain of salt, but like, you know, if they want a unicorn, they want a rock star, like those sorts of things. Often it's like, oh, we're looking for someone who is like the best of the best, but like, you know, could also mean, well, they're not going to like offer, you know, as much, that sort of thing. I think a lot of times companies aren't aware of that perception. I think the people making the job descriptions, a hiring manager probably doesn't know that on, you know, LinkedIn and TikTok, people are making fun of the companies that want a rock star or a unicorn. I don't think they realize that. So I always like take it with a grain of salt, but I do think some of that, like if companies are looking for someone, you know, like good with ambiguity, needs little direction, things like that. I think recognizing that that could mean that there's truly just not a lot of direction or things are going to change all the time, that sort of thing. I personally think that what's behind a lot of that is more a lack of skill for like the hiring manager who made that job description than it is an immediate red flag. So I would personally try to like validate. So like check blind, go look up the company or something like Glassdoor, like look up reviews and try to like learn about what people are saying about the company is like my recommendation, because I think some of this stuff is like a genuine red flag and some of it is someone who lacks skill and saw, you know, thought like, oh yeah, asking for a unicorn, like that's like a cool thing to say. People are going to like that. I think it's cute. And, you know, not like realize that there's perceptions around that.
Do you think it's a more of a management problem in the sense that instead of managers should say, and not just assume someone's a good interviewer, but show people how to interview? Because I find that happens a lot where interviews, they're not confident. They really don't know how to interview. And then you had this zappy, it sounds great. You had that interview really quick. You said like 24 hours, what have you. But I see like months and months go by and it's decision by consensus because everyone's scared to make the decision. So it doesn't either you lose the candidate or it just takes so long, it just everything falls apart, right? So it's, those are like a big, I see those are big issues that go on. I see all the places. What about you? Is that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think again, you're going to lose like your best people because they're not going to stick around if the process is dragging on and you're not confident in them. And because other companies want them. And so you're, you know, going to lose people, like especially really good people, if you have an inefficient process or a process that doesn't value people. I think a lot of companies also jump into hiring without really knowing what they want. And so sometimes they need, you know, the first couple of weeks of interviews actually end up being more of a norming conversation to figure out like, what do we even want? And they realize like, oh, the level of the role is off, or this title doesn't actually generate the kind of applicants that we thought we would get, or, you know, those sorts of things. So I think there's all sorts of just like research and understanding of the market that people end up doing within their hiring process instead of before posting the job. And I think this is part of why having a strong recruitment team is important for companies. And it's not just like outsourcing it, because I think that some of them end up not getting that kind of guidance. And then they end up creating these wacky processes that don't actually value candidates.
Oh my God, Bonnie, from an outside perspective, right? I run a search firm, done it for 25 years, right? And the crazy thing is, that's what they'll do. They'll put it out there and I'll, you know, teams, you know, going for it, looking for, you know, sourcing people, interviewing people, all that. And they're like, nah, yeah, I'm thinking now it's really only going to be an AVP. Like, yeah. Oh my God, we just contacted, you know, X amount of people for it. And every iteration of that, it's like, oh, you're driving us crazy. Can't you just make sure here's what we really want to do and not iterate with everyone else's time?
Yeah. I 100% agree. And if it is just like I think companies also having more of a practice of just talking to people that they think could be a good match for the company. Like I think most people wait until they're ready to hire a role to even have a single conversation around it. Versus I think if everyone made a point of constantly sort of building their networks and talking to people that they think like could be an interesting fit and doing some searches on LinkedIn and being like, that's an interesting post. Let me like check that person out. And if it seems like someone you might want on your team at any point in the future, like connect with them, have that be someone that you start engaging with so that when you do post that role or have that opening on your team, you've got a bunch of people that you've been cultivating over the year that you kind of years, like, you know, some things about them. You understand what their career journey has been and like what skills they might have and how that might align to what you need. Like a lot of that stuff. I think if like hiring managers and just, you know, everyone kind of made a practice of doing that, it would probably make hiring processes run a lot more smoothly.
Rick, what's the vibe at Blind? How are they feeling about the market, about interviewing, layoffs?
Yeah. So the overwhelming majority of folks, and you could kind of see it from the Blind post, they believe that the job market is more competitive. They believe that it's going to be harder for them to land the next role, especially if they want like bells and whistles of like a job title, raise, more stock, quote unquote, more prestigious company or a remote role. A lot of folks also believe that if they were to land a new role, they're not even confident that they can land a competitive total compensation package, right? Because there's this downward pressure in terms of like the number of jobs out there and an increase in the number of job candidates for each role, right? So that is just going to be much more challenging for a lot of these folks, even technologists or senior folks that have like a great resume and great, you know, experiences in their kind of toolkit to really navigate and really kind of like advance right now.
So this goes back to what Bonnie mentioned earlier. So do you think part of the toolkit for job seekers should say, hey, maybe I shouldn't just focus on FANG kind of companies. Maybe I should look at healthcare, because I was just looking at the jobs report for today. Healthcare is one of the biggest hires. And so is government. Now, I don't know if they want to go to a government federal, you know, kind of job, but those seem to be the
benefits
big,
of government jobs. Yeah.
You know, so I don't. So maybe for some people, like you said before, Bonnie, put your ego aside and say, hey, if I can't get, let's say I'm in between jobs and I just can't do it, put the ego aside. And it's easy for us to say, but maybe to try and do and pivot into something else that perhaps at least you could get a job and get back up and running.
Yeah. And I think some of the, like when I see some of the TC on Blind, which granted, it's so equity heavy that I'm like, take the equity out of there. Like, that's not real cash that you're getting. Right. And we can talk apples to apples. But anyway, it's jaw dropping. And, you know, to see like 25 year olds making 200-300K a year, like it's wild. And And I think some of these companies have honestly done the market and these people a disservice, because no one realistically is going to pay like a 25 year old's anything. I don't care how, you know, how good you are, like 300K a year to do pretty much anything. And so I think it's set some really unrealistic expectations for people, and it's causing them to close the door on really good like opportunities that could be available to them. I also think, I mean, I love remote work. I hope to stay remote. I literally did a LinkedIn post today talking about like, if I had to go get a remote role right now, here's like what I'd be doing and like what I would be like sacrificing, that sort of thing. So like, I do love remote work, but I get that like, this wasn't really a thing 4 years ago. Like even, and I actually worked from home, but I traveled all the time. Like, it is a real luxury. And I think for some people who entered the workforce in the last few years because of COVID, they entered thinking like remote work is the norm. And I think companies are making a mistake, like taking away remote work. I think there's all sorts of like equity issues with that. Like, I wish there was more remote work, but at the same time, like it is unfortunately in 2024, like it is a luxury. And I think some people have been like given unrealistic expectations around that because it really wasn't like available in the way that people want it to be back in like 2020 pre-COVID. And so I think there's also some, like, just the last couple of years have set some really unrealistic expectations in multiple ways for the workforce.
What I love, Bonnie, Rick, you can appreciate this. So on the Blind Podcast, for people who will be watching this, you know, right now live or in replay, you'll get these people, so like just at random, some young person, maybe 25, maybe 28, 500,000 total compensation. It has nothing saved. He goes, I don't understand. I don't have any savings. I'm like, what, like, what is going on here? How are you making $500,000? And like, you just don't have any money. And then he goes through his like expenses and he spends like 6,000, I can't remember exactly, 6,000 a week going to concerts and just like, just blowing through money and not even realizing it. And It's right, Rick. It's such an interesting thing because they made so much money at such a young age. I don't think they understand the meaning of money or how it works. And they feel this is going to go on forever. So it's like, all right, I could just keep spending.
Right.
Yeah. Welcome to the like great vibe shift, right? Like, I think we're like riding really high in the last 2 years. You have the great resignation, all of that. So competitive and so easy to kind of land the next role. Like employers are tripping over themselves. And now it's almost like kind of like a great reset to like normal. Yeah. Right. I think it's going to be a lot of hard lessons learned for a lot of folks. And I think I really appreciate you, Bonnie, for coming on in and like sharing those like very tactical lessons for folks to kind of like really rock and really like, hopefully like use starting today or tomorrow.
Hopefully.
So thanks for coming on the show, Bonnie.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.